Live to see it, friends. You're listening to Fast Forward Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Fast Forward Radio is an audio production of The Speculist. You'll find us online at speculist.com. That's S-P-E-C-U-L-I-S-T.com. Or go straight to the blog at blog.speculist.com. At The Speculist and on Fast Forward Radio, we explore a convergence of emerging technologies and emerging possibilities which lie at the heart of this, the greatest period of transformation in human history. Our world is changing in ways that are difficult to predict, sometimes even difficult to imagine. And Fast Forward Radio is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead and that will be here sooner than you think. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you today?
Well, I'm super fantastic. How are you, my friend?
I'm also doing great. I'm excited about our show today.
We've got a big one. We're going to be talking a little bit about one of our, Stephen, is it fair to call it forbidden subjects?
We don't have too many things we don't talk about much, but this is on the edge.
This is on the edge. We typically don't talk about partisan politics or religion on Fast Forward Radio, mainly because those topics get so much coverage elsewhere, and we say, well, we'll only talk about these things when they are directly related to accelerating change, to transhumanism, to the kinds of issues that we normally discuss. We've got a presidential election going on in the U.S. right now, and I would love to be able to talk about it on this show, but it has yielded very little in terms of subject matter for us to discuss, hasn't it?
So far, I'm hoping for better.
Yeah, we'll see as we get closer.
As it gets closer.
Yeah, maybe they'll give us some fodder. But religion we've avoided as well, and for similar reasons. But we have done a few things in the past. I remember we did our big God and the Singularity survey at the Speculist a few years back, and we've had a few conversations along those lines. But certainly, when the subject is how religion and spirituality connect with transhumanism, connect with our interest in the future, then that becomes very much a topic of interest for us. And our guest this evening is someone who is very much in that space. Giulio Prisco is a writer, a technology expert, a futurist, a cosmist, and a transhumanist. He's a former manager in European science and technology centers, and he writes and speaks on a wide range of topics, including science, information technology, emerging technologies, virtual worlds, space exploration, and future studies. He is especially interested in the convergence of science, religion, technology, and spirituality. Prisco is a former senior manager in the European Space Administration, and he currently serves on the board of directors of the Institute for Ethics and Emerging Technologies and the Italian Transhumanist Association. Giulio Prisco, welcome to Fast Forward Radio.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Well, we are delighted to have you with us. Let's jump into our topic of the day, which is the convergence of science and technology with religion and spirituality. So let's talk a little bit, Giulio, about your magazine, Touring Church, where you've got a publication here dedicated to exploring this convergence. Now, why is a publication such as that needed?
Well, I think a publication such as that is needed because it's an important issue. It is an important issue because many people would like to have something able to give the same hope, the same sense of meaning, and the same mental benefits given by religion to our grandfathers 100 years ago. At the same time, we now know really too much science to be able to believe in anything like the traditional religions of the past, mm-hmm. which then need a reinterpretation and reformulation to become acceptable again to people with the scientific sophistication that we have now. So it is my very firm conviction that religion has to be reinterpreted and reformulated to become interesting again for people coming from a scientific background. And basically, this is what the magazine is for.
You know, it's a real need for there to be a safe, I don't know if maybe safe is too strong of a word, but a place where these issues can be discussed, because it obviously churches don't provide a comfortable home by and large for trying to explore this kind of issue, and as we'll explore in a little bit more depth later, by and large the transhumanist community has not been a terribly open or friendly place to try to have these kinds of discussions. So I think it's very important that there be a home, there be a forum where people can explore these things and start talking about them, particularly because, as you point out, this is religion and spirituality is a huge part of the whole human experience, and it's one that isn't likely to completely disappear. It's one that I think is likely to undergo significant changes in the years to come. But if we aren't aware of it, and if we aren't talking about it and thinking about it, those changes will occur irrespective of the other major changes that we see happening. And it seems like that would be really unfortunate.
Absolutely, absolutely. Julio, in a book, The Case for God, Karen Armstrong talked about two fundamental types of knowledge. She talked about logos and mythos. Logos, of course, is really a scientific way of thinking about the world. It became prominent really in the Age of Enlightenment of 16th, 17th centuries. And really, it's taken us a long way. It's given us amazing economic, political, and technological changes ever since then. Are you advocating returning to a mythos, or just reintroducing mythos to our worldview? What's your thoughts on that?
I just don't think the difference between logos and mythos is as a big a difference as it's normally thought of. Logos and mythos can be said to be two different cognitive modes that I think are both important and both needed in different circumstances. I definitely don't want to go back to mythos as the only cognitive mode that should be used. But I think these two different cognitive modes can definitely have a peaceful coexistence.
Okay. It's interesting that they get along so badly these days. Or I'm not sure if they get along worse than they ever have. But they certainly don't get along well on Facebook. I can tell you that much.
Well, definitely. In fact, I don't use Facebook that much. I only use it when there is some heated discussion about something. And this something about which there is often a heated discussion on Facebook is very often religion.
Yes. If not politics, it's going to be religion that's got people's back up. Well, that book, The Case for God, one of the things that Karen Armstrong notes is that, because she talks about the big upside of this transformation in thinking that occurred when we went from mythos to logos being kind of the prominent or the mode of thought that holds sway, is that all the massive economic change, all the massive technological change, all good stuff, but that the downside, if there is one, that is that it's that mode of thought that has given rise both to the perhaps more the term I use is obnoxious, I guess, strains of atheism and fundamentalism, that in fact those are kind of two sides of the same coin, and they both come from taking that sort of strict logos approach to spiritual matters. Do you think that that's true, and is there a connection between that and the fact that you see so much just overt hostility towards religion in the transhumanist movement?
I think the hostility toward religion that is felt by very much of the transhumanist community may have kind of a psychological explanation. How gentle and politically correct do I have to be? Do we have to be here on Fast Forward Radio, by the way?
You can say whatever you like. If you say bad words, I might have to bleep them out. But
okay, no. I'm not going to say any bad words. But what I think, and as a matter of fact, what I see in all discussions is that many transhumanists, and I'm talking of some very good friends of mine, have kind of a fundamentalist, very negative reaction against religion, just because they had bad experiences with religion when they were younger. And I'm talking here of people who have been indoctrinated in a very strict conventional traditional religious sense.
Right.
And that's very much understandable from my point my point of view, and I definitely sympathize with them, and they can empathize with the fact that they were badly hurt by religion. A consequence of that, I think, in many cases, was the development of a complete rejection of religion that sometimes becomes very much irrational in its own way. And I think the reasons for the rejections of religion in the transhumanist community can be very much traced back to that. Instead, and I say that I did not have a conventional religious upbringing myself. In my family, we didn't go to church.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew of religion when I was very young as, you know, one of those things that other people do, but it was not a relevant factor in my life. It was not a relevant factor in the life of my family. And I have not been religiously indoctrinated at all. And I have to thank my family for that. One of the consequences is that now I can become interested in religion and take religion seriously as something important without any fear of falling back into conventional religious habits that I never had in the first place.
You know, that makes a lot of sense. I can see where one's upbringing would have an awful lot to do with that. Particularly if you're carrying if you're carrying baggage from bad experiences with religion earlier in life. And I think the counter to that question about hostility towards religion and the transhumanist movement is that there probably would be hostility towards transhumanism in most organized religions if they knew anything about it. But most, by and large, the topic isn't largely known, and it isn't talked about. So there's probably a certain amount of hostility on either side. Oh, go ahead.
In fact, there is a lot of hostility against transhumanism in traditional religions, with some very interesting exceptions. For example, a couple of months ago, I was in Salt Lake City to give a talk at a conference organized by the Mormon Transhumanist Association, which is a very interesting phenomenon of complete integration of transhumanism within the framework of a mainstream religion. It is really a very interesting experience, and I very much look forward to see that experience replicated also in the context of other religions.
I wonder if Mormonism is a special case. I wonder if the combination would be a successful in other religions.
Of course, Mormons say that there is a very special case. For example, because in Mormonism, there is a concept of theosis, which means to become like a god. And according to some very sensible, in my opinion, interpretation of the Mormon scriptures, a god was one being like us human beings. And in our future, we may become like a god ourselves. And this, at least according to the interpretation of Mormonism promoted by the Mormon Transhumanist Association, is a very central point of Mormon thinking. And in this case, I would certainly agree that Mormonism may represent a kind of a unique case. But at the same time, I think that some elements of these possibilities can be found in other religions and in other Christian denominations as well. For example, in mainstream Christianity, there is a kind of advancement through science and technology as one of the means by which God wants to see us evolve in the future. So these elements in mainstream Christianity are not perhaps as developed as in Mormonism, but I think they are there.
You know, I would expect if transhumanist ideas were to catch on with other religious movements, for whatever reason, I would expect it to appeal more directly and immediately to Eastern religions. You know, I would expect for there to be kind of a Hindu, you know, transhumanist association maybe. And of course, Buddhism is kind of the one religion that's already sort of represented in the transhumanist community. You have, you know, it's the one where people will come out and say if they have a religion, that's the one they'll kind of come out and own it, because you can be an atheist and a Buddhist at the same time, I suppose. You don't hear as much about those, although I've noticed in some of what you've written that there is a certain amount of overlap or adoption of transhumanist thinking amongst the New Age movement, which I guess has some connection into Eastern religions.
Yes, and I think this is a very interesting point. Now, let's go back to the Eastern religions for a moment. I don't know as much as I would like to know about Eastern religions, which is really too bad because it's something fascinating. But from some point of view, I think you are right in the sense that there is a lot of potential for adoption of transhumanist ideas in Eastern religion. But I think we also have a social consideration to take into account, and that is the fact that transhumanism is still seen very much as something that belongs to the so-called Western civilization. And there have been tensions between our Western civilizations and the civilization that have been developed in other parts of the world. And I think this conflict does not favor the adoption of transhumanist ideas in other regions of the world. There is no reason why things have to be that way. And I consider this as a problem that should be solved. And I'm sure that when there will be more penetration of transhumanist thinking in other regions of the world, then we may see a very interesting convergence between transhumanism and other religions that don't have anything to do with Christianity. But at this moment, I'm afraid that transhumanism is still very much a Western thing, and so its cultural influences are felt much more in the Western world.
Well, it will be interesting to see how these ideas find their way into dialogue with various religious traditions. The example of the Latter-day Saints Church, the Mormon Church, I think is fascinating and probably remains kind of an outlier, just because there's this real interesting, I guess, synchronicity between basic transhumanist ideas and basic Mormon doctrine. I would expect that once the ideas get out there, that Eastern religions would probably embrace transhumanist thought better, that traditional Christianity will probably have a more difficult time, although, as you mentioned, that there's some inroads. Judaism, I'm not sure how it would go down, and I would think Islam would be like the major religion that just probably is not going to be able to get a big handle on transhumanist ideas. At least not the I would make an exception, because even the most doctrinaire religions have a lot of variations within them, and so I know there's a very spiritual tradition of Sufism and so forth that might be more open to some transhumanist ideas. But I would put Christianity somewhere on the middle or over to the less adaptable side, which is interesting, because it seems that some great kind of pre-transhumanist thinking has come to us by way of Christian thought, and in particular, I always return to, I'm sure you're familiar with Teilhard Chardin's book, The Phenomenon of Man. Thank you, The Phenomenon of Man, which gives us the Omega Point and leads ultimately to a very singularitarian kind of a worldview. And Tipler at the same time, who starts out in physics and gives us the physics of immortality, and who I think ultimately finally became an Orthodox Christian, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, he did. And in fact, his second book after The Physics of Immortality is called The Physics of Christianity.
Oh, I have not read that book, The Physics of Christianity, but there you go. So it seems that there is a connection that the two managed to meet up almost in spite of themselves. That almost in spite of what Christianity has to say about some of these kinds of ideas, or what transhumanists have to say about Christianity, it seems like the two managed to find connections with each other anyhow.
I think there is a very strong connection indeed, and in fact, even a few decades before Teilhard de Chardin, some very transhumanist ideas were formulated by Russian philosophers like Nikolai Fyodorov and the Russian cosmist movement that happened between the end of the 19th and the beginning of the 20th century. Now, that is really a fascinating philosophy. Incidentally, I wish to mention that this very mystically oriented philosophy may be thought as being one of the direct originator of the Russian space movement. There was, in fact, last year, a very interesting documentary on BBC about that. Nikolai Fyodorov was a very unique thinker, And he may have been the first to formulate in a modern terminology, of course modern at his time, the idea that future science and technology may be able to resurrect the dead from the past. This is a very basic religious idea, and of resurrection of the dead. And Nikolai Fyodorov, who was a Christian himself, was the first one to formulate it in modern terms. And I think we can safely say that Russian cosmists were really the precursors of modern transhumanists.
Giulio, could you tell us a little bit more, what is a cosmist?
What is a cosmist is a very interesting question, and I would have to mention the books written by Fyodorov himself. But fortunately, we have a more modern example in a book called A Cosmist Manifesto, written a couple of years ago by my friend Ben Goertzel, who is a well-known theorist of artificial intelligence. I think you did have
Ben is a frequent guest on Fast Forward Radio,
yeah,
one of our good
friends
as well.
Yes.
And I would recommend The Cosmist Manifesto of Ben to everyone. It's really a practical philosophy which can be a guide for our times, and a very powerful guide for the cosmic transhumanist future that is awaiting us. I recommend that book to everyone.
Now, one of the pieces of that book, a section that's out on the Turing Church site and is available elsewhere, is a piece you co-authored with Ben called 10 Cosmist Convictions.
Yes.
And it lays out some of the principles of, I suppose it's called cosmism, I guess. And let me read one of these, and then I want to get into it a little bit more deeply. It's actually an idea you just mentioned, going back to the Russian cosmos. One of the principles is space-time engineering and future magic will permit achieving, by scientific means, most of the promises of religions and many amazing things that no human religion ever dreamed of. Eventually, we will be able to resurrect the dead by, quote, copying them to the future. So let's talk about
that. This is what I think he did.
I'm sorry, I talked over you. Go ahead.
This is what I think he did.
And how? Talk a little bit about how you think that can come to be. How will technology provide us the means to resurrect the dead?
Well, to answer that question, I will have to go very deep into advanced scientific theories. I hope we have a few minutes for that.
We've got a bit of time left, so please.
That's great. So my scientific answer to that is that I don't have the foggiest idea. I cannot be expected to have the foggiest idea, because I am in the 21st century, like you. In the very early 21st century, we are not in the singularity yet, and there is so much science that we do not know. The only thing that I do know is that it took us only a couple of centuries to go from not having any communication technology at all, and a society where everyone has a magic machine in the pocket that enables them to communicate with everyone else on the world.
Right.
That hasn't taken too much time. In the 80s, we had computers as big as houses, and now I have much more computing power on the iPhone that I'm using right now. So if such advances can happen in only a few decades, what cannot happen in thousands of years, or what cannot happen in millions of years? So I think the answer has been given by William Shakespeare already a few centuries ago, and much better than anything that I can say. There are more things in heaven and earth than whatever we can imagine right now. So I don't know, I do not know what our descendants or what some other alien civilization will be able to do in the far future to bring back the dead. But I think they will be able to do something. I am a physicist by training, and even if I'm not a practicing theoretical physicist at this moment, I do continue to read the journal, and I try to understand what is going on in science. And what I can say is that nothing of what we are discussing now is really incompatible with the understanding of the world that is given us by modern science. On the contrary, as a matter of fact, we can see, especially in advanced interpretation of quantum physics, that the idea of being able to bring back the dead is not against science, is not against our understanding of the universe right now. And we know by history that when something is not impossible in principle, sooner or later, our engineering skills will find a way to achieve it.
Do you think that? I didn't mean to throw an unfair question at you. I wasn't actually looking for what procedure they'll follow. More along the lines of what do we know about physics to date, or what do we understand conceptually that gives us at least hope that that it might be doable? I wonder in the physics of immortality, Tipler talks about recapturing the quantum states of that individual, and if you recapture all of that quantum information, then you have recreated that person. You've got that person back. Do you think in those terms, or are there other ideas that you think that might make it possible to copy someone from the past into the future?
Oh, the scenario depicted by Frank Tipler in The Physics of Immortality is a very extreme scenario, in the sense that it happened in the very, very far future.
Yes.
It happens at the very end of the universe. And it happens at a moment where intelligent life has become the dominant factor in the universe, and acquired the capability to manipulate the space-time in a very dramatic way. So the idea of Tipler is that at the end of times, our super intelligent ancestors will find a way to steer the universe before the end of the universe in such a way as to ensure that intelligent life has an infinite amount of computational capability available. And he proposes to use that infinite computational capability to perform a complete emulation of all intelligent beings that have existed in the past, down to a precise emulation of the quantum state, which is not even necessary if you think of that. We don't want a copy to be bit by bit identical to the original. We just want a copy to be good enough in order for it to feel like a continuation of the original. So I don't think we need a bit-by-bit perfect emulation down to the quantum state. And that's one of the reasons why I think that resurrections may actually be achieved much before the billions of years that we had to wait until the omega point of T. I'm going to give you just one example, which, as it very often happens, was developed by science fiction writers first. And in this case is Arthur C. Clarke and Stephen Baxter in a novel called The Light of Other Days, which is a very good science fiction book. What happens at some point in the book is that they discover that the fabric of space-time is full with micro wormholes distributed with hugely high density across the space-time. So the result is that every point of space-time is connected to every other point of space-time. And in the novel, they use this existing property of space-time to extract the complete information about what constituted living and thinking human beings in the past and recreate them in the present via a procedure analogous to mind uploading. Now, does that really happen or not? Is the fabric of space-time full of micro wormholes that may permit copying to the future? I do not know. This is just one of the many possible mechanisms that have been envisaged by modern thinkers. And, well, I hope one of these mechanisms will be actually useful.
Yeah, we only need one that works, right? That's the, you know.
We need just one that works.
Yeah, need one good one that works. Well, let me ask you this. So let's say, you know, the unthinkable happens and you were to die in a terrible accident tomorrow. I'm sorry to use such a grim scenario. And I know that you're a participant in cryonics, I believe. So let's say that it's devastating and there's no chance there.
Yeah.
Okay. So is it your expectation that that the copy that gets made into the future by our technologically advanced descendants, that copy will be you, that you would have a continuous experience from the moment of that accident to waking up in some other time in some other place, or is it just it's a copy that's there and you've actually ended?
Well, let me say like that. It's not an expectation. It's an experience, because I have this experience every day when I wake up in my bed. And you also have that experience every day. The one who wakes up in my bed in the morning, strictly speaking, he is not the same person who went to sleep in the same bed the night before. Why do I say that it's not the same person? Because many things have changed. There is no physical continuity and there is no psychological continuity as well,
mm-hmm.
because you have lost some memories, and we have acquired some new memories. For example, the memory of a dream that you did this night. So, strictly speaking, the person is not the same. But on the other hand, I know that the person is the same. I know that I'm the same one that I was yesterday. Now, if I think of the person that I was 30 years ago, I was much younger at that time, of course,
mm-hmm.
and I did not have most of the memories that I have now. I did not have exactly the same temperament that I have now. But, on the other hand, I know that I'm the same person. I think that has to do with acceptance. I am the same person that I was yesterday because I'm willing to accept that person as my past. And I'm willing to accept the person that I will be tomorrow as a valid continuation of me today. The point that I'm trying to reach is that I think it has a lot to do with acceptance of continuity of identity after a change, which may require some kind of redefinition of our notion of identity. But I think seeing things in these terms, it is a concept of identity that can very well survive mind uploading and can also survive resurrection in the far future. So the answer to your question is definitely yes. I think the person who will wake up in a magic world sometimes in the future will be me.
And so having said that, your views are not terribly different from those of a mainstream religious believer where that's concerned. Is that fair to say?
In fact, they're not different at all. Now, I want to mention an anecdote that I have always been a transhumanist. Mm-hmm. I was a transhumanist when I was a child. Well, of course, I did not know that what I thought was called transhumanism. But I remember that when I was like 6 or 7, we went to the beach and my mother gave me science fiction books to keep me quiet. And some of these books were very good books. For example, I remember reading when I was 6, Childhood's End.
Oh, Childhood's End. Mm-hmm.
Clark.
Yep.
It was a great book. Now, those books really blew up my mind, and I have been a transhumanist ever since. Of course, I did not know there was such a thing as a transhumanist movement at that time. And I did not know it until mid-90s, where thanks to the Internet, we could get in very deep contact with the rest of the world, much more than it was the case before. So I found out about the extropians in the 90-something after reading an article on Wired, Wired magazine, and I became a member of the extropy list. I remember that my first thought after reading the writings of modern transhumanist thinkers like Max Moore was, now this is really a great and a powerful new religion for the new millennium that is coming, and my very first post to the extropy list was about the idea of technological resurrection that we have been discussing. I'm talking of something like 98 or 99. So despite the fact that we were mentioning before that most transhumanists have a certain hostility toward religion. I think what you say is very much right, that for the important things, what I'm saying now is exactly the same thing that has been said by religion for a millennia. What am I saying? I'm saying that we may be resurrected in the future. Now, forget the fact that I'm talking of resurrection via technological means instead of via supernatural agency. The important thing is that we may live in a universe that may permit scientific resurrection or those who were alive in the past. And that's the same point of the real. That's the central point of religion. That's the reason why religion has been invented, because we don't want to live with the thought of death.
Well, Julia, I would add that also, you know, religion is involved, obviously, in dealing with the problem of death. But I think there's also the problem of morality, or evil, good versus evil. How would the Turing Church deal with the problem of evil?
Yes, and as a matter of fact, the problem of evil is a reason why many people leave their religious beliefs. Because if you believe in a God who is all-powerful and good, benevolent, then you cannot understand how God can allow suffering and atrocities like ours to happen. As we all know, philosophers have been discussing that for centuries, and it has remained a problem. Now, let's go back to the 10 cosmist convictions, and there is a one point where Ben and I wrote that in sometimes in the future we will develop the capability to create computational universes that are complex enough to contain thinking beings, which is something that if you follow the evolution of computer game technologies, you begin to find very plausible, because every year computer games have artificial intelligences much smarter than the year before. And next year we will have bots in video games much smarter than the bots of today. So you ask yourself the question, well, may it's point, this artificial intelligence become intelligent, that they are thinking beings like, and if the answer is yes, as I think it is, then you ask also another question, which is, well, maybe we ourselves are living in a reality which is generated computationally by someone in a higher level reality, you know, like we are intelligent bots in a World of Warcraft, on some very future version of World of Warcraft on steroids, that some higher level reality is computing our world. This is what is called the simulation hypothesis, and the simulation hypothesis that we live in a synthetic reality which is computed somewhere else, it cannot be ruled out by science. And as a matter of fact, if you remember in the physics of immortality that we were mentioning, he talks of resurrection in a computationally generated reality as a preferred scenario for our resurrection in the future. So we had to sort of accept the idea that we may be living in a simulation. Now, what does that have to do with the problem of evil? Again, I wish to apologize for my dog who is barking outside. She doesn't like that I'm talking with on the phone with someone else.
She has her own views on the problem of evil.
She has her own views of the problem, and she's really trying to make them understood. And I'm not intelligent enough to understand that. So, suppose we live in a simulation. The simulation is run by somebody. If we want to use a simple word, we may call this somebody a god. Now, why does God allow suffering and evil and atrocity to exist if a god is good? And the answer can be because there is nothing that he can do. Now, how does that agree with the concept of an omnipotent God? I think it does agree. If you remember that computation takes a time, and I think it can be safely said that the universe is the fastest machine able to compute itself. I think this is a high-level assumption that makes a lot of sense. Think about the prediction of tomorrow's weather. There is an extremely complex hydrodynamics of the atmosphere and effects of so many factors, from the macroscopic scale all the way down to the quantum scale, that we would never be able to do a very accurate computation of tomorrow's weather with the computers that we have now. What if it is impossible to compute tomorrow's weather in less than 24 hours? Or in other words, what if the universe is the fastest machine that can be able to compute itself? This means that no machine within the universe can ever be able to compute the state of the universe in the future faster than just waiting for things to happen. If this is the case, and I think it makes very much sense, then the only way for God to know what happens in the simulation in the future is to just let the simulation run until the future is realized. So suppose a God is running the simulation that is our universe, and being a benevolent God, he or she or whatever does not want Auschwitz to happen in order to avoid the suffering of people at Auschwitz. There is no shortcut. There is no computational shortcut. There is no way that God can know the end result of the computation short of letting the computation run until the end. But if God lets the computation run until Auschwitz, then somebody will suffer. So that the impossibility to know the future in such a precise way as to avoid suffering is a feature of every computational universe complex enough to contain thinking persons. And the solution to the problem of evil is that there is not much that God can do.
God would have to just forego creating the universe at all, it sounds like.
Yes.
In order to be sure that that an Auschwitz doesn't exist. I wish we had more time. We're right at the end of our time here. I would love to spend some more time talking about this, and perhaps we'll have you back on at some point, and we'll get a little bit deeper into this. The time has absolutely flown by, but I did want to give you an opportunity. Was there anything else that you wanted to mention that we didn't get to today?
I think we covered everything deep enough. What I would like to do now, how long do we have? How many minutes do we have?
About two.
Okay, so I'd like to invite all readers to just read about the things that we have been discussing. And I can see that you have provided some links on the Speculist website. My email is very easy to remember. It's my first name at gmail.com. If you want to discuss these things, just feel free to email me. And I should mention that there are many discussion groups dedicated to exploring the connection between science and technology and the religion and spirituality. The Turing Church magazine is one, and you will find links to the others on the website.
Great. Well, let's just say the Turing Church is a great place to start, and we have, as you mentioned, provided links both on the Blog Talk Radio site and the Speculist. So I encourage all of our listeners to check it out, and we'll pick this conversation up somewhere down the road, Julio. I look forward to talking with you again.
I look forward to that.
Thank you so much for being with us. Well, Stephen, I believe our music this evening is going to be a surprise. Is that right?
It is a surprise. In other words, we haven't quite gotten to it yet in time for this recording, but we'll certainly have some music to finish the show up with.
Yeah, we you know what? We can't predict what it's going to be. It's one of those limitations in the simulation. Well, we thank everyone.
Let's find out.
We'll find out soon. We thank everyone for being with us this evening, and we will be back at the regular time next week. 2 weeks from tonight, Jim Elvidge joins us to talk about the simulation hypothesis in a little bit greater detail. So we look forward to being with you all. And until next time, live to see it.
Every now and then I get the urge to call her up and see what's going on. We once tried to make it through the night, but we stumbled over dawn. I still find my mind wandering. Even though the rain has stopped, maybe somewhere it's still thundering. Once I forgot to call her when I promised, so I bought her some flowers instead. And left a trail of roses from the kitchen up the stairs into the bed. Like the universe.